Hello, and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online and find yourself having technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. And to those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome and thanks so much for tuning in. This is our third episode of On Sacred Ground. We are broadcasting live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific on this January 3rd, 2015. This episode is indeed the first of the year 2015, and it happens to be our first call-in show. And we'll be discussing during this call-in show ancestors. Ancestors and helping spirits, both blood ancestors and otherwise. So if you have any questions, comments, or would like to share some of your own stories or ideas about working with ancestors or honoring ancestors, do call in. Again, that number is 657-383-0525. Love to have you and be able to have your ideas on the show. So people all over the world, since time immemorial, have performed rites and honoring the people who've come before them. Ancestors who lived lives of legend that culminated in who the people performing the rites are today. Most often these rites are not considered merely symbolic, but are seen as a literal invitation to the spirits of the deceased to bring their wisdom, their aid, and their guidance to the living, and to partake of the joys that would not be had those dead not been. From the burning of hell notes and paper replicas of merchandise in East Asian cultures, toward providing the dead with means and belongings in the afterlife, to the honorary and divinatory rites of Samhain, practiced annually by neo-pagans across America, and across the world, really, in the time of late October, people continue to engage with their blood ancestors and the ancestors within their identity cultures. So what can we learn from this? Is this helpful? Is there a discernible difference in the lives of those who take the time to hearken back and listen to the voices that speak up from long ago? Are we in the West just as able as practitioners in, say, a more traditional culture or an unbroken line of animistic thought and belief? Are we just as able as those peoples to contact our ancestors and have their engagement in our own lives in real, concrete ways? About a year ago, I was at a concert in Brooklyn. And when I will preface this by saying I was experiencing especially heightened sensitivity, spiritual sensitivity at this time due to my own healing process at the time. But I was at a concert in Brooklyn, and the band was an Afro-Mexican band known as Las Cafeteras. They're great. Las Cafeteras. And they're from L.A. And they blend hip-hop with indigenous rhythms and dances. Sprinkled throughout the set and embedded in their song lyrics were calls for social justice and heightened social consciousness around issues of government and public welfare. Somewhere near the end of the performance, at a particularly emotional moment in their set, one of the band members encouraged the mostly young Latino audience to send a message of love to their ancestors. And this band member invited the presence of the audience's ancestors as well. It was a very symbolic gesture, and it really moved everyone. Many people raised their hands up to show solidarity with the idea that there is support and love for us, the living, coming from the other side, coming from unseen realms, that was an idea that a lot of people were very familiar with, and it felt good and strong and helpful, especially as we were talking, as these band members were talking and singing about some of the plights that people were experiencing today, in terms of economic issues, in terms of injustice in the world and depression. So it meant a lot to people. This was very excellent master of ceremonies move on this band member's behalf. So my partner and I, we had a wonderful time at the concert, and we are on our way home, and we're just beaming from the power and beauty of this performance. And we're talking about it nonstop on the train ride back. And when we open the door and we sit on the couch of our home, I realize that something is off, and I feel a little bit claustrophobic. So I closed my eyes just to take a moment of rest, and, you know, it had been a very long day. And I realized I was being bombarded anxiously with images that were completely foreign to me, places and times that were not New York City in the year 2014, but rather these images and thoughts I was having, they really seemed to actually speak to the landscapes and history of Latin and South America. The well-intentioned band member and most of his audience had called forth their beautiful, emotional, very eager to chat ancestors. But since no one engaged with them after that initial invitation, they all came home with me because I guess they sensed my spiritual sensitivity at the time. They all came home with me, and they were very eager to chat. One spirit in particular, an indigenous woman from the region of present-day Venezuela, that's what I could surmise from my conversation with her and what I was being shown, was particularly insistent. She was a weaver during her lifetime and belonged to a group or clan of weavers. Weaving and the animal spirit spider, these were a part of her medicine. And the spirit was very emotional about her desire for me to get a hold of her granddaughter, who I assume had been an audience member at the show. And, you know, this was like my living room had just turned into a waiting room of dead people within a moment. And it was definitely very overwhelming and not how I had planned on spending the rest of my night, but this was the spirit that sort of had pushed her way to the front. So I'm sitting in my living room and I'm trying to explain to this woman, to this spirit, that I had no way of contacting her granddaughter, that I don't know who she is, and that I'm terribly sorry that she's having trouble contacting her or getting her to listen. And I'm serious. She shows me a phone as if to say, that's not true. I know you guys have this these days. You can use this. I know you can use this to get in touch with her. And I'm sitting there, and I'm half laughing that she would do that. But I'm also really heartbroken that there's nothing I can do to relay messages from this truly beautiful ancestor to her descendant, who probably lives no more than a 3-mile radius from where I live, but who I'm just simply not going to be able to track down. So I simply tell this spirit, I will pray for your descendant. That she have clarity and wisdom to receive the message that you're trying to bring into her life. And I also, you know, said I would pray for her protection, because it seemed like that was really important to this ancestor, that there was some message regarding protection or well-being that this spirit was trying to bring forth. So I would not be able to contact this descendant, but I did tell this ancestor, I will pray for your descendant, that descendant has the experience of wisdom and protection that you're hoping for them to have. And in return for my saying that, well, it looked like she put a spider on my head, a sort of spiritual spider, which is how my relationship with that particular animal spirit began, which is another story for another time. But suffice it to say, it was a very interesting night, and one that showed me that the power of our simple gestures and invitations here in Middle World, Earth, here in the 3D realm, are far more potent than we generally realize. That what we consider to be symbolic here, the spirit world often, I think, takes as very literal. That when we ask, that what we ask to engage really does engage with us back. So the question is, are we prepared to listen and to ourselves engage?
Father.
Welcome back to On Sacred Radio, On Sacred Grounds, I'm sorry, on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. Again, I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in right now and having technical issues online, remember that you can call in, and today is a call-in show. We're excited about having anyone who wants to step forward and speak about their own experience working with spirits of the dead and ancestors. You can call in at 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. That was How Shall I See You Through My Tears from the 1980s musical Gospel at Colonus, a musical that tells the story of the tragic Greek king, Oedipus, through the lens of Pentecostal ritual. And that song is about a reunion between Oedipus, his daughter Antigone, and his other daughter Ismene. Parallel to the practices of petitioning and engaging with ancestors is the work of resolving the lives of our ancestors, whose legacy that was left for their descendants was more or less problematic. You might have heard the people use the phrase, "Oh, I'm doing ancestor work." And they might say, you know, by my ancestor work, I mean that I'm providing offerings to my ancestors. I might have an altar to my ancestors. I'm giving them incense. I'm giving them food. But then there's also people who are doing when they say ancestor work, they mean that they're engaged in some way where they're trying to resolve or heal something that came before them. So, because there are some ancestors that we have here in the human species who left their lineage with mental and emotional patterns that need to be cleared, not only from the descendant, but from the entire family line itself, going back to the very ancestor with which that issue began. And I'm not only talking about curses or jinxes that are ancestral in nature. Someone, someone 6 generations back who did not like your grandmother and said, "I'm putting a curse on you and your descendants," which unfortunately has happened innumerable times throughout history, and there are ways of resolving that. I'm talking about ancestors whose very lives have left a pattern imprinted in their descendants. And because of that, their descendants today are experiencing illness or difficulty in ways that seem insurmountable because, as far as they know, they're doing everything they can to get over that issue. But it seems like no matter what they're doing, they can't shift that energy. So when it comes to ancestor work, whether we're talking about moving an ancestor on or healing an ancestral line, there's lots of ways, lots of methods, lots of theories about how to do this based on what is needed. I think that this is some of the most important work of our time, personally. And I'm going to begin this part of the show by discussing why I personally don't work with my ancestors. I do not invite my ancestors into my life in a big invocational way. And I do not have an altar set up to my ancestors, which I know would be very controversial in many circles. As a spirit worker, what I do have is an altar that is set up to my ancestral helping spirits, which I think is a very, very big and important delineation for us in our time, in our culture, in the West, to make. I call on my ancestral helping spirits every day. I make offerings to them at my ancestral helping spirit altar, but I do not call in all of my ancestors. And this is an idea that has been very important to me, especially through my studies with the Last Mask Center for Shamanic Healing based in Oregon, which the leader of the shaman associated with that community, Christina Pratt, she would call those ancestors the ancestral helping spirits. She would actually call them those that lived well and died well. So there's a distinction between this huge mass of ancestors, tons of people who've come before us, who have led to us, truly a blessing that we are here, but there are those who have crossed over to the other side and have returned from that place to walk with us in a good way. And that's not everyone. It simply is not everyone. And I know that this would be a bit out there for certain communities, especially, I imagine, some of the diasporic traditions we have in America that are working to rebuild and uphold indigenous traditions from other places. But something that makes sense to me is that these indigenous traditions from traditional cultures are coming from unbroken wisdom lines that have masterfully maintained an ancestral cultus for millennia, if not longer. These are peoples who know who their dead are. They know where they are. They know who did what. They know who caused what, who's causing problems, what gifts and talents who and who is bringing, who can be looked to for this. I'm talking about specifics. They know this inside and out. They know this information going back a very long time. It's an energetic management system is really what we're talking about here, the energetic management system that has resulted in us. And they know this inside and out and how to work with that energetic management system, the various avenues within that. For most of us in the industrialized West, people whose ancestors, for one reason or another, left or were taken from cultures that had such practices or abandoned them, this whole ancestor thing is quite revelatory. It's an adventure. It's replete with discovery, very spontaneous happenings, intuitive insight, genealogical serendipities. And it's also beautiful and fun and awesome. But what I see is that most of us are doing it in a way that imagines that the energetic management system of a traditional culture that has been in place such that these ancestors we are calling upon are all wise and for our good, when many of them are not. Indeed, many of our ancestors even crossed over for those of us in the industrialized West, especially considering those of us who are the descendants of ancestors who experienced genocidal acts, forced migrations, or just simply living an American life in the 19th or 20th century. We have work to do, and many of those who we would imagine to be in the role of a helping spirit are actually, in the state they are right now, sort of merely ghosts.
Talking to the lama, singing to the lama, being to the lama, high up, oh, to the lama, when I die. Oh, being to the lama, singing to the lama, shouting to the lama, praying to the lama, high up, oh, to the lama, when I die. When I get down to the river, I'm gonna stick my sword in the sand. By the old ship of Zion, she took her many to the promised land. Way over in Beulah, so bad I ain't no dying there. Well, the saints shout in victory, oh, they sing it off everywhere. Way over in Beulah, I have voice of friends I've known. Well, rocking Jerusalem, singing Jerusalem, big Jerusalem, high up, high Jerusalem, when I die.
We ended that last segment with me making a claim that I think might be a bit of intense for people to hear, the idea that a lot of us in the West are dealing with ancestors, and we are calling upon our ancestors as a big sort of clump. What we're actually calling upon, not all the time, but for some of these people, we're calling upon ghosts. And we are yet imagining that these are helping spirits, who had actually crossed beyond the veil into the other world when they're not. So in this, when we're calling upon ghosts, we're calling upon ancestors with unresolved issues. We're calling upon people who, yes, they might have led to us being, but in the state that they are in now, they are liable to burden us with their own unresolved issues from their lives, while we're trying to fix our own problems and expecting them to be able to help. Or at best, they're able to help us accomplish simple sorcerous acts in exchange for offerings, but they're unable to bring the full, deep breadth of their life's wisdom, accumulated talents, into our lives and the lives of our descendants. You know, we talk about this idea of rest in peace. And I think that plays a factor here. When we rest, we can, you know, make sense of the day before. We have a troublesome day, or we have these questions, and someone says, well, sleep on it. Because the idea is that after that sleep, after that period of refreshment and recollection, you can come at this from a different perspective. And such a period is necessary, even for an ancestor who I feel has sort of lived well and died well. That period of having gone beyond the veil between life and death, actually made it to the other side, they are no longer here, and are then able to, with their own guides and helping spirits, look at their lives and put things into context, heal what needs to be healed, and then say, when the time is right, okay, I'm ready to deliver this. I'm ready to deliver this actual wisdom, this recollected, made sense of life to my descendants. And I can come back as an ancestral helping spirit rather than a ghost, rather than someone who really isn't coming back at all. You know, a ghost, they're just here. They're just someone who has never moved on. So when I provide spiritual court readings for my clients, for instance, I don't just look at the spirits around them and the temperament of those spirits and get a sense of where the spirit is from and what medicine they bring into this person's life. That's all well and good and interesting. But I also look into what kind of spirit they are. Is this spirit right for this person to work with at this time? You know, Grandpa James, it might be so cool that he's hanging around my client. But is it really cool? Is Grandpa James hanging around in a good way, or is Grandpa James hanging around because he needs my client to resolve something that he never finished? And we have all these television shows that make it so cool that psychic detectives and intuitives and superheroes, brothers, are all running around trying to resolve things for dead people. But we're never questioning, why were those things left unresolved in the first place? Why are we spending so much time, you know, we're taking road trips across America, we're trying to connect people in the Yellow Pages. Why are we spending, are we really here to live the life that a dead person did not live for them? Do these things really need to be resolved to the extent that we are romantically shown on television, or do, you know, in the Hoodoo tradition, we call it cut and clear, when you are severing an emotional attachment and letting go of the past? Or do these spirits need to be told, you had your time, and it's time for you to move on, and it's okay. There is so much love for you, and we've got it from here. And your job now, as a dead person, is to go to where dead people go, which is not here. So when I look at these spiritual court readings for my clients, I don't just look at who's around them and where they're from and the medicine they bring and what they were like during their lives, for instance. But I want to know, does this spirit need some help before they can really be of help themselves to their descendant? This help might look like what you find in spiritualist traditions as a form of, say, elevation, in which offerings of light and fresh water are brought over a period of days to an altar that is physically elevated each day to represent this soul's evolution. As the practitioner is raising up this altar, they're saying, sort of saying, as this altar is being raised on a ladder, on a book each day, so is your soul being raised for you to go to where you need to go. And oftentimes prayers of comfort, possibly traditional prayers from that person's religion or spiritual history, might be said, because we're talking about unresolved trauma. We're talking about the need for comfort. We're talking about, no, I'm afraid of letting go of life because I didn't finish what I wanted to finish, or I'm just so ashamed. And we as the living, our job is to say, no, there's no reason for shame. It's time for you to get to where you got to go. You've done your part, and now you need to get to where you need to go so that we can live the lives that we have come here to live. And that is, in my practice, what really the essence of performing ancestral elevation really is. And then, of course, the goal from that is that the spirit is letting go of the baggage that's keeping them here, so they can move on and let the living do their job. And perhaps even return eventually with actual wisdom gleaned from the resolution of their lives. Or the help that's needed might look more like an ancestral clearing, which is work that I do that I also learned from the Last Mass Center for Shamanic Healing, in which someone who is able to navigate the unseen world goes there and helps this ancestor resolve their life from that place. So Jellyfish Rising in the chat room asked a question saying, do you find that the ancestors who have passed, who are problematic in life, do they end up being helping spirits in death? Which is, and then they add, especially if they are venerated and taken care of in ancestor worship now. To which I would answer, in my experience, in my practice, not necessarily. And I think that that is something that a lot of people are wondering and possibly expecting. This idea that people will die, and just having died, now they're available to be awesome. When really people die and are not that much different from who they were when they were alive. So I'm going to get to that in a second, actually. That's actually leads me directly into what I was going to say next, which is that it's not just these big genocides, and these big events that cause rips in the ancestral fabric, or big traumatic things in the ancestral fabric. It's that we are a society that is simply not living well. And because we are a society that's not living well, we are not dying well. We are not dying in a good way. And I don't mean living well just in terms of sort of I'm going to Whole Foods and I'm making sure I'm getting my organic vegetables and I'm living well, or I'm going, you know, on my taking mini retirements and I read the 4-hour work week and now I'm living well. I mean living well like being able to let go, like being able to move with the tides of a life and not hanging on to that love that we had with that partner for 3 months, 20 years ago, and 20 years later, we're still hung up on that moment or that particular incident that we had with our child, and we've never been able to let go of that. And we spent the rest of our lives just in a spiral, going down spiral of shame and bitterness. So much of being able to die well, like physically die well, is in our ability to die well in our everyday life, is in our ability to actually let go and to move with the tides of life and to let go emotionally of those things that no longer serve us and be able to be in tune with life's goodness and our own helping spirit. This is what I mean. One of the things I mean by living well and dying well. So we are generally dying with so much that is unresolved from our lives, so much that we're afraid to let go of, and having not accomplished that which we originally set out to do when we got here, that we said, I'm going to bring this medicine, and I'm going to be this person, I'm going to learn this lesson, and we, in a big way here in the West, in the industrialized West, are dying having not accomplished that, are dying having gotten really deterred from that path of who we came here to be, of being our full authentic selves. We end up dying very often unresolved. So another question that I pose to all of these sort of television, when we're watching these television shows about these great missions that the living are going on behalf of the dead, one thing we're not thinking about is, how do I not end up being that dead person? How do I end up, what do I need to do to not be that dead person who is depending on the living, who's a burden to the living for not having done what I came to do rather than a gift to the living? How do I end up not being that person? So this really comes to, again, I was saying before, how this is about being able to die well in our everyday lives, being able to let go of that which needs to be let go of, to shed, to transform, which is related to tending the gates of birth, life, and death, period, which is something that our culture is simply not good at doing. For instance, so we have this idea of living well and dying well. We obviously, if you turn on the television, if you drive down any road, you're going to see billboards, you're going to see advertisements that are not encouraging people to live their full authentic self. You're seeing billboards and advertisements that are, and television shows, et cetera, that are encouraging people to live in constant fear and to minimize and compromise who they are and their authenticity to be something else. To be something else that might be, say, more societally palatable, something that fits a small mold. So that's one issue. You're not living well and dying well in that way. The other is when we consider funerary rites that would be performed to help a spirit move on, that's also not something that we in the West are doing. For the most part, our funerary rites are pretty stiff. They're not doing much, and they're certainly not intended to do much on behalf of the culture, on behalf of the person that just died. And lastly, if, say, the funerary rites have still not done the work of moving a person on, then there's someone in the culture, if we're thinking about a traditional culture or a culture that is engaged with the spirits, there's someone often who can take on what we call, anthropologists or mythologists have called, that psychopomp role of helping move that spirit on, of helping to escort the dead to the other world. And we're not having that either. So we're failing in all of these arenas, yet also wondering why things aren't changing in our world in alignment with our intentions, in alignment with our very, very good intentions for a healthier environment, for racism and misogyny and transphobia and homophobia to come to an end? Well, my question is, have the ancestors who lived in those fears and in those phobias, have they been moved on, actually done the work that our culture doesn't do, which is getting them to where they need to go?
When the fire voice is heard, 'tis the ancestors' breath in the voice of the water. Those who have died have never known the land. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning woods. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rocks. The dead are not under the earth. So listen no more often to fire voice is heard, it is the ancestors' breath in the voice of the water.
You are listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and poetical justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running Conjure show on radio and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa and Ancestor Healing. This is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, welcoming special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic traditional religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 Pacific Time. And on Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, where the stars at night are big and bright, there to school you so no one can fool you, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All the shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in beautiful Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burma Shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company is based in sunny Forestville, California, and provides traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at luckymojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. They offer spiritual counseling, psychic readings, and setting of lights online and in person, so visit them today. So we ended that last segment with me discussing what I call ancestral clearing and why it's necessary in our culture, how our culture does not really provide a life for us to live well or the tending of the gates and such that we die well, so that our ancestors are not a burden to us and so that we are not a burden to our descendants. And in this ancestral clearing, which is something that I actually perform in what I would call shamanic journey, which is something that I go into a trance with my helping spirits on behalf of a client, asking them to lead me to what needs to be resolved in my client's life. And rarely do I know that this is specifically an ancestral issue. It might be in the context of a larger shamanic healing working I'm doing for a client. But at some point in that shamanic healing, as my helping spirits and I are resolving one thing, my spirits will sort of pull the curtain and say, all right, we're going into the ancestral realms. And it is there that my spirits show me not only the ancestor in this person's life or lineage, but the story that took place around this ancestor. And so there's a formula that usually happens. I'm shown the ancestor, I'm shown the story, and I'm shown what needs to be resolved here. But then I have to work with the ancestor to resolve it, which requires that I work with them in sort of an emotional healing basis. We don't have a lot of time left on the show, but I do want to share one story from what ancestral clearing can look like. I had a client who was West Indian, and was dealing with some issues, financial issues, and some protection issues in her life. Money was not flowing as well as she had wanted it to, and protection. She was found herself often on the end of other people's knives, for instance. So I moved in with my helping spirits into her energy field, and we began to resolve some things there. We moved a couple of intrusive energies, et cetera, rather par for the course. But at some point, my helping spirit said, if we really want to get to the root of this issue, we have to go into the ancestral realm. So my helping spirit brought me there, and what I was being brought to was a scene that definitely smelled like the early 19th century in the West Indies. And what was going on here was that there was a young girl who was born into a culture that, in which slavery was not being practiced. There were no enslaved Africans, but the people were very poor. They were very poor, and because they were from a broken African lineage, what they had was folk magic and some ideas of how to go about their spirituality in a good way, but there were big pieces missing. And this young woman, this young girl, had been born into this culture, and her magic, her medicine, was very big. She needed a mentor. She needed someone who could really reach back to before these traditions were broken and provided her with medicine from there, but she did not have that. So she was doing the best that she could, and no one in her culture could really help her with her intense psychic sensitivity and her big spiritual gifts. And what happened here was that at an early age, which definitely showed me that some of these ancestral clearings, they're not about people being good or people being bad. They're simply about things having not been done in a good way that benefited descendants. And what happened here was that at a certain point, an intrusive energy that looked very serpent-like got to this young girl and led to a twisting of her power and her energy. So though she grew old and was very powerful, she did not have the scope, she did not have the influence that she could have had things happened in a good way. And nor was her influence for the greatest good. There was a bitterness, there was a coldness to her life. So I'm in the sort of interrogation room that my helping spirits bring me into in the other world with this spirit. And she's telling me, there's nothing else I could have done. It's not my fault. Agree with her. It isn't her fault. It's not always about fault. And I do some emotional healing with her, some emotional clearing work with her, telling her, well, I understand, but based on the life that you lived, this is the life that you left for your descendants, and we need to resolve this. So after we do some emotional healing and clearing work, a new opportunity, a new possibility opens from that lifetime that didn't exist before. And I go with her and my own helping spirits back into her lifetime to tell a different story. And we go into that lifetime, and at that point where the intrusive spirit was going to enter her life, she gained the sensibility that even though there's no one in her culture who can really help her, she runs. She runs with all of her might, all of that sense of soul's purpose and needing to protect it. Is just sparked in her, and she runs to a tree in a forest and hugs that tree, and that tree becomes enlivened and gives her the protection she needs. And in that moment, because she has the protection that she needed, she grew up to not only be a medicine woman, but to begin an ancestral cultist, to begin a women's medicine cult in the community that was able to do work that no one else had done before. And this ancestor went behind the veil and immediately came back as a bright ancestral helping spirit with beautiful snake medicine for her people and her descendants, including my client. This has been another episode on Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience, in which place plays a primary role. Until then, Happy New Year, and keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping a light in mine.